This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. From the MGM Grand in Las Vegas for the Terrence Crawford-Victor Postol fight is A.J. Hoffman. Today's Blitz Rewind starts now.
If you're a big fan of Houston, I think one of the things that would settle you down is if you get this move, then what that does for your chances of retaining someone like a Tom Herman.
It'd be a great thing for U of H to get into one of the Power Five conferences. It'll be something that can move the athletic department into a different world, but it would be just moving there, whereas Tom Herman is in a position where he will have better options. Eugene Monroe, offensive tackle, been in the league for 7 years, and he just up and today decided he's done. He's mainly retiring because he is worried about concussions and what his brain will be like down the road.
Plenty of guys are going to want to take that spot. Eugene Monroe isn't going to make any season ticket holders say, "I'm not renewing."
Live from Dave and Buster's on Richmond, here's Jerome Solomon and Danny Mata.
Welcome back into the Blitz. Final hour here. Dave and Buster's, indeed, Fred and AJ are out today. We do have AJ along with Freddie Roach coming up here in this hour. Danny Mata along with me, Jerome Solomon. Hope you enjoyed the first couple of hours. That little rewind from Jong. Hit us on Twitter at Jerome Solomon, at Danny Mata, M-A-T-A-J-R, as in Danny Mata Jr. Jong is at Jong Snow. The O in snow is not an O, it's a zero.
Yeah, which is horrible. Oh, and by the way, Jong, for you to not use Jerome's Dynamo LGBT fan impression on that rewind is shameful. You know, I mean, I think you're off your game today. You're not. That was the best part of the show by far. And then, you know, Zadok Jr.'s got jobbed out of the closing to the Zadok Jr.'s Gem of the Day. They got jobbed out of the back end of their song there that AJ worked so hard to write and perform for them. You should be ashamed of yourself, John.
Oh, no, no, Houston. 713-7.
Houston. No. I like
ESPN
that.
ESPN.
Oh,
no, Houston.
No. You hear that?
713-7. Houston. 3776. That's Danny Mata with the exclamations in there. And that story is about the Dynamo trying to dissuade its fans from the gay slur of a cheer or chant, however you want to, whatever you want to describe it.
And Jerome, who writes for a living, apparently misunderstood the article, thinking that they were asking the LGBT fans to chant. What is it again, John? Can you play it back for us?
It says,
Houston.
No. I think Danny did a much better deal of that than I did.
Maybe I did, but you started
it. I didn't say anything about LGBT. I just said they said fans. It wasn't
you
any
just,
particular
no,
fans.
No, but you were like, oh, we,
soccer,
how do they want to say?
Soccer fans don't get – they're not separated like that. Let's not separate them into different – fans are fans. They are who they are. I don't know who was yelling that, but they're asking them not to do that anymore. And in fact
– good luck with that, by the way.
At the Dynamo game against FC Dallas here last night, Houston police officers collected some funds for the Dallas Police Department and the memorial funds, which was a really good thing. And they banded together, took photos with both teams. And you know how those two squad, the Dynamo and FC Dallas, are such hardcore rivals. But that cause kind of erased that just for a few minutes at least last night. So that was a good thing that the Dynamo did. And HPD deserves some applause for that. 713-780 ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776. Well, we touched a little bit on Baylor, and I had a column in today's paper about Jim Grobe, the acting head coach who stepped in for this year until they find someone, and his comments at the Big 12 Media Day. And to be fair to him, and as I pointed out in the column, he said some things that seemed a little tone, not even seem that word completely tone deaf and just kind of silly. But he did come back later and, you know, cleaned it up a bit and, you know, tried to clarify what he had to say. I was just stunned and amazed, though, that was even necessary. This is a guy who just been over there for 2 months. Came late May after Art Briles was run off. He doesn't know much about what the hell's going on at Baylor or what was going on for sure before he got there. So to try to, you know, make such strong statements about the culture at Baylor when we know the culture at Baylor was one where rapes and rapists were hidden and protected in a sense, and rape victims were, if not just out and out mistreated, certainly not given the respect that they deserve, not given any kind of care and counseling that they would need to the level that anyone with any human decency would do, and particularly distasteful for it to be a Christian university to react that way. So I would think that Baylor, Jim Grobe, just shut up. Don't even talk about that. You just say, look, I'm here to coach this football team and these players right now going forward. I wasn't here when any of that happened. I can just guarantee you stuff like that, it crosses my desk now. The reaction will be quite a bit different than what it was before, and that's it. Do you want to talk about my backup left guard now?
Exactly.
Let's move on.
Hey, not on my watch. I mean, that's all you got to say. Not on my watch. It won't happen. You know, and to and some of the quotes that he had said that he didn't necessarily think it was a culture. But as you said, you don't know that. I mean, and the reality, and I hope I'm wrong about this, but I can't help but wonder how many more victims there are out there and players who were not named. You know, I mean, no investigation is going to uncover 100%. I hope I'm wrong and that we got the full story. I really do, because it means that there's no other victims and no one else was traumatized like that. But based on what we're seeing, based on the culture that we saw in the cover-ups, more than likely, because statistics show that a lot of rape victims do not come forward.
Indeed.
So we know that there's a chance here that there's more victims and another player who, well, for whatever, there's at least evidence that Art Briles turned a blind eye to it.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what part of the problem is, and this has nothing to do with the women being assaulted, has nothing to do with the type of vile human being that would commit these assaults, but part of the problem is, as I can show you from some of the emails and correspondence I've gotten today from Baylor fans about, you know, angry at me for calling Jim Grobe out for this. I'm like, why are you mad at me? You know,
right.
What, I mean, that's part of the problem, that you're trying to act like it didn't happen. And I understand you love your university. I've got much love for Baylor, too. I want Baylor to do extremely well and have always pulled for Baylor to do well. But, you know, that rapiness that was going on there, and for the powers that be to have had such a cavalier attitude about it, and beyond cavalier, there are victims who've said that they were, you know, openly discouraged from going to police, from pursuing their cases, being chastised and mistreated and treat, you know, the victim blaming and victim shaming, and that, you know, it just... For you to be a fan of that university, great. For you to love your school, great. But to even at all try to downplay what went on by, well, it's everywhere or it happens all over the place and why you want to talk about it anymore, shame on you, period.
No, exactly. And I think, Fred has said this many times, most Baylor fans don't look at it that way. They understand the reasonable people that say, look, this is, you know, what you're mad at is you're upset with the situation. We're just the messengers. You're just the messenger. You're saying something that, hey, look, this is what happened. This is unacceptable. And then you got those handful of people that they take it as a personal insult to them. Well, you're insulting my university with what you're saying and everything. It's like, you're not saying anything. There was a culture of rape at your university.
Yeah, I didn't do it.
And what you're saying is that's not acceptable. And I'm sorry if you're a Baylor fan and you don't like it. But that's the fact.
Yeah, that's the situation your school got itself into. Indeed.
You shouldn't like it. Your school got themselves into that situation.
You should be more upset than I am.
Exactly.
I've written two columns on the situation. Two total. So it's not like I've been beating a dead horse, even though that was a regular refrain from my email today, and I was like, look, dude, I mean, with this situation, beating a dead horse wouldn't be a bad thing. If I had to go to Costco and buy a case of glue and beat on that, beating the dead horse, I would do that. Give me a break. It's not – this won't go away soon until the school has a complete change of mindset, and it appears they've been making the steps toward that. But then you have Jim Grobe saying the things that he said, and I love Mac Rhodes, respect him as a person and as an athletic director, and he steps up the other day at his introduction and used the same joke he's used at, you know, when he came to U of H and when he was accepted, took the job in Missouri last year, about, look at my wife, I'm a great recruiter. Well, that's not the place and time,
right,
with what Baylor's going through,
right,
to be
exactly
objectifying a woman in that sense. It's harmless. It doesn't mean anything.
Right, but context, time, place, it's all about, yeah, you've got to understand. It's just like, you know, Greg Hardy last year when he was talking about, you know, he was talking about, like, he wanted to beat up on people and hurt them and crush them and everything. It's like, dude, you...
And mentioning Tom Brady's wife,
yeah,
and all that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, given the context of what you had just done, choose your words wisely.
And that's what Baylor needs to do a heck of a lot better job. I'd love to get us back to talking about nothing but Baylor football. They have to stop stepping in it. This is The Blitz on ESPN 975. Stop, play, pretend, give each other different names.
We would build a rocket ship and then we'd go. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Forgive you. Don't you know, don't you know? True friends stab you in the front. This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. From the MGM Grand in Las Vegas for the Terrence Crawford-Victor Postal fight is A.J. Hoffman. Live from Dave & Buster's on Richmond, here's Jerome Solomon and Danny Mata.
Welcome back into The Blitz. 713-780. ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. You can text us at that number as well. We mentioned a little bit of the GOP convention in Cleveland, that they're playing some remixed version of Love Train, a classic. You would know none about that. That's
right
before your time. Classic OJ's cut. And the OJ's are not pleased. Eddie LaVert and Walter Williams said in a statement that they were ticked off to the highest of pistivity. They were asked to appear at the convention and said, no, they were not going to appear because, you know, they didn't want to be involved in it, but their song was used anyway. So that's politics, though. I think you can buy the rights to use a song in those situations. You just have to hear people dog you for doing it.
Pistivity, huh?
Yeah, you know, that's...
That's an interesting term. I don't think I've heard pistivity before.
Yeah, that's a Robin Harris one. speaking of the Republican National Convention, the New York Post put out a story that said, it's been a great week for gay escorts in Cleveland.
What?
Male prostitutes contacted by the Post said business is booming at the RNC attendees as... Many of the attendees are clamoring for their service. Business has been way better. I've seen 10 clients so far, one male escort said. Most of them were first-timers. You could tell they were nervous, but once they became more comfortable, they seemed to be having a good time.
Politics. There's always the other part of politics.
One escort said he's already made $1,600 in the first 3 days of the convention. That's over six times the amount he normally sucks in. I normally only make $300.
Why would you say that? Of all the words you could have used. Jerome. We're going to get kicked off the air for good.
I normally only make $200-$300, but I've been seeing lots of guys in hotels downtown. He said the business near the Quicken Loans Arena has been... hot and happening. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776.
Sucking in some business. Sucking in them dollars.
Alex Bregman out in way out in left field right now. Let's go on out there. Bregman is out in left field in another game tonight. His second one at that position in the minor leagues. He's been playing most all third base, and he moved up to AAA. And rumors are hot and heavy that he'll be brought up to the Astros here at some point in the next, maybe even by tomorrow. That they open a, what do they have? Is it Seattle that comes in for three games, and then it's three games with the Yankees?
Angels, I think.
I mean, the Angels,
the Angels
are here,
and then yeah. It's the Yankees, yeah.
The Angels are here for three over the weekend, and then three games with the Yankees. So the six-game homestand, rumors are hot and heavy that Bregman will make his major league debut.
And I think that that's – I think that the rumors should be what they are, because I think the way he's playing right now, he's just obliterating the ball. And his
they wanted to keep him down until he, you know, until he had a dip and had to fight his way back out of it. But he seems dip-proof.
Yeah, right now. And then and the versatility that he's showing, I mean – the writing's on the wall. That's no coincidence. You're playing the guy at all the different spots that you may need to use him at to create roster space for him. Guys are hitting well. I absolutely think that, you know, because Fresno is in Round Rock tonight. He's just a couple hours away. Like, I think that this is it. I think he'll be here tomorrow. I really do. I mean, I don't have an inside source or anything like that, but I think he's coming tomorrow.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting dilemmas. It's not really a dilemma. It's just a matter of trying to guess right. And you're like, okay, he's been so hot. Do you bring him up here? And then, you know, how does he deal with the pressure of being so hot and trying to continue it in a new surroundings, new teammates, new everything, and the excitement of moving up to the majors, which is always an adjustment. You have players who come up and struggle immediately because it's unusual. Not unusual, because it's new and it's different and it's a first-time thing.
Yeah,
then you have others who hit the ground running. But one of the issues, though, is you bring him up and put him at a position he hasn't played, so you're adding to the mental stress of his situation
right.
By him playing in the outfield when he hasn't played if you put him there, or making him DH when he's used to the rhythm of being on the field.
Right.
So it's not as easy as people make it out to be, but the easy thing is to say, if he's that good, he'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. And when he's hitting the way he's hitting, I mean, you can tolerate the growing pains, you know, in other spots. But, I mean, that was always one of the big things about him, about the scouting report on him, was that he's such a versatile player and he can get around and play, we know, anywhere in the infield now and left. And I think that, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, you know, what happens if it turns out to be like A.J. Reed? You know, he was a great season and he comes up, he struggled. A.J. Reed was not doing what Alex Bregman has been doing this year. A.J. Reed wasn't doing that. I mean, he was hitting well, but Alex Bregman's just been tearing the cover off the ball. And I mean, and he is hitting everything right now. And this has been going on. You know, they promoted him to AAA, and it's almost like he could sense how close he was to the majors and promptly started to beat the snot out of the ball even more so than he had been. He has just been on an unreal tear. And I liken this to what happened last year when they called out Carlos Correa. You've got to make that move. You've got to be aggressive and say, all right, we're going to make this push. We're committed to winning right now. Right now, he's swinging such a hot bat, you know, that I think you plug him in. The team's playing good baseball. You mentioned, it's a six-game homestand. He's going to have the crowd behind him a little bit. This is the time. This is the perfect time.
Yeah. If you can play, you can play.
Yeah,
you know,
and he can play.
And you know, I'm sure there have been cases where they brought a guy up too early and it, you know, he lost his confidence and it ruined him. If he's that fragile,
then he's not going to be anything.
How good was he going to be long term anyway? And this is a team that's in the hunt, well, 3.5 games out, entering play today. They're off today, but 3.5 games behind the Rangers and a couple of games behind in the wild card chase. A lot of baseball left. I mean, so even charting this day to day where they are in the standings is just, you know, something to get people talking. It's more about them playing good baseball.
Exactly.
And continue to play good baseball.
Exactly.
Which they've done lately.
And as you've said, if he is the real deal.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Kenny Hart.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. From the MGM Grand in Las Vegas for the Terrence Crawford-Victor Postol fight is A.J. Hoffman, live from Dave and Buster's on Richmond. Here's Jerome Solomon and Danny Mata.
Indeed, welcome into The Blitz. Coming up on our last half hour here. We're going to send it out to Las Vegas, where A.J. Hoffman is at the MGM Grand for that big WBC, WBO, Junior Welterweight Unification Bout, Terrence Crawford and Victor Postol. AJ has the great Freddie Roach.
Joining us now on the Blitz is the man who is training Victor Postol to prepare himself for this fight against Terrence Crawford. He's also the trainer of Manny Pacquiao, which we'll discuss over the course of these few minutes. I'm here with Freddie Roach. How are you, Freddie?
I'm good, and you?
I'm great. Talk about preparation for Crawford. What's it been like? How's Victor feeling? How's he look?
Victor's doing really well. He's a hard worker. He has dedication. He's very well trained for this fight. And, we work with southpaws, right knees, lefties, everyone in the gym. Actually, we had a lot of good sparring partners for this fight. Because Crawford does switch from the southpaw stance to the right-hand stance quite a bit. And, he's a talented kid, and we know we're in a tough fight, and that's what we expect. But we're 100% ready for this fight, and I feel like almost like when I came to Vegas with Manny, when Manny first fought Lwaba here, everybody in the world told me my guy doesn't have a chance of winning, and that's the feeling I'm getting here. And everyone's a little bit negative and thinks that my guy won't win the fight, but I think he will. I feel an upset coming, and upsets make the world go round.
What's it like having a guy who's not regularly a pay-per-view fighter when he takes that step? Is it different for you? Like, do you prepare him for that, for all the stuff that comes along with all of this nonsense with it?
Of course, they have to learn that along the way. Of course, this is a big step in pay-per-view, and the winner of this fight could fight Manny Pacquiao, of course, and that would even raise the level up a little bit more for the stakes. And obviously I train Manny, Manny is my guy, but the thing is, it wouldn't be the worst situation in the world to have Victor his next opponent.
Is that weird for you to you're coaching a guy to possibly win a matchup with another guy that you coach? Is that awkward for you?
Not really awkward, no, because they work really well in the gym together. And Postal's been to training camps with Manny Pacquiao before, and they've sparred quite a bit, and they know each other quite well. And hopefully we can get somebody, maybe another opponent. But if it did happen, I couldn't deny him that opportunity to fight Manny, the best guy out there, and make of course a lot more
payday.
Money,
yeah.
A big payday. So the thing is, I would make sure he's in good hands, and his people, they know what they're doing, and his promoters over in Russia, as well as promoters here in America, they all know him very well.
At some point, do you let guys know that it's a fight, but in the case if he were to fight Manny Pacquiao, it's also sort of a business partnership when you fight a fight like that? Does he understand that, and is that something he's talked to you about?
Sometimes I'll lose guys over it, and they'll get a little angry at me, but sometimes it is just a business deal. But the thing is, why don't you train me and not him? And because I've been with this guy for 15 years, and he's been my number one guy for a long, long time. And I'm sure Victor understands that. But the thing is, a win here could put us in that position. But this is what we're here to win the fight, for sure. And I feel like we're the big underdog here, and the 6-1 underdog. And I might have to make a bet on this one.
Did you ever feel, when Manny said that I'm done, I'm wrapping this up, did you ever feel that was really it for him? Or did you feel like there was going to be a comeback fight at some point?
After the last Bradley fight, where he showed me and what a lot of the old men, he came out, and his, we had a great training camp. I kind of knew he was going to fight again, and I didn't think it would be this soon, but I do know Manny has a couple fights left in him for sure.
Why do you think the odds on this fight, you mentioned a 6-1 underdog, why do you think they are what they are?
I'm really having a difficult time with that because both guys have 23 wins and no losses, and they have one common opponent. My guy beat the guy in a decision 4 years ago, and Crawford stopped him last year. Why the big number, I'm not sure, but he's from Nebraska, and he gets more TV time than us, and I know HBO and who Bob want to win the fight, and who they're favoring, and it's not my guy, but I feel an upset, and I love upsets. I mean, this is what we're here for.
Does that bother you at all when you know the promoter wants your guy to lose, when he wants to use him as sort of a stepping stone, especially like this for his first pay-per-view? You know, when you get a guy to a pay-per-view, you're thinking, I've gotten my guy to where he's the guy. Yeah. But in this case, it's almost like you said, Bob, you're saying Bob wants to see him lose.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we were on the 80 side, but we're not. And that happens. That does happen sometimes, and I do understand it. And he is American, and he's more popular in America right now than my fighter is. But my fighter's had two great knockouts on American TV in his last two fights. And if he does it again here, he'll become even a bigger star. So, don't count my guy out, and don't go lose your money. 6-1, I know the odds are good for me.
This seems like on paper at least, it seems like a really competitive fight to me. 6-1 does seem awkward. In a year where we're supposed to get Ward and Kovalev, I mean, where do you think this fight ranks as far as big fights of 2016?
On paper, these are the best fight and the best at 140. This is the best fight out there right now. This is definitely the best fight. And Ward-Kovalev fight is a great fight also. And this is what we need in boxing, the best to fight the best. And then all this, promoters all fighting with each other and not like doing business with each other. It's foolish. So this is what happens when when boxing's at its best. UFC or MMA will never take over boxing as long as we keep fighting like this.
Does it bum you out when a guy like Canelo, who's a big star in this sport now, says, I'm going to fight anybody, I want to do whatever it takes, and then a couple of weeks later, he drops his championship and doesn't really want to fight Golovkin? And that's a fight. I mean, for a minute, it got everybody really excited,
yeah,
and then it went away. Does that bum you out as a guy who's really close in this sport?
Yeah, you know what? But I'm not going to blame the fighter completely, though, because I know that there's more of the promoters don't want to put that together.
They got to take care of that golden goose.
Yeah, because they know who that is right now. And they know who their moneymaker is. And, that is Oscar's number one guy right now.
Right.
And they don't want to see him get beat. And Triple G is a tough fighter, and he is a tough fight for anyone in the world. And to me, he's a top 10 the best fighter in the world today. And it's funny because he came to my gym to visit one day, and then Manny Pacquiao and him took a picture together. And then Manny asked me later, Freddie, who is that guy? I said, Manny, do you watch TV at all? Because he's playing basketball. He's not a big boxer. He doesn't watch boxing quite
a bit.
But he will get ready when I do get to the Philippines. He will start training, and he is the best at it when he wants to work at it. And again, it was kind of funny that I said, Manny, come on, do you get to watch TV a little bit once?
Every once in a while, turn on HBO, yeah. Watch this guy go do some work. Before we let you go, Freddie, I got to ask you about George St. Pierre. There's new ownership in the UFC. Are the top stars in the UFC are all getting popped for steroids at this time, which I know was a big issue for George.
Yes.
Dana says he's 99% sure George is never fighting again. You're closer to him than Dana is, in my opinion. What do you say? What say you about him ever fighting again?
He was in L.A. last week. We did train together, and we do work out whenever we have a chance. And in the right circumstances, I think he can fight again, and I thought he will fight again. And he was in negotiations with the Fajitas brothers, and now that they sold the company, I think that's all ended. And at this point, George doesn't know what's going on right now. And but he, you know, one thing about George, he trains every day of his life, just to keep himself sharp, and he stays ready. And I do think that he will fight one more time if we get the right opponent and the right money for the right opponent, of course.
That is the great Freddie Roach. I appreciate you taking the time with us today. Best of luck on Saturday with Victor Postol. This is a big fight for him, I understand. It's a big fight for you. Yep. It could be a big fight in a lot of ways if it leads to what we think it will. But best of luck to you, and I expect it to be a good one. Thank you for the time, Freddie.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
There you go. That's Freddie Roach, guys. Guys, I've been telling you this for a while. Most of you know by now, if you're using Joe Schmo's carpet cleaning company, they're leaving your floors dirtier than they found them. It's crazy. You're paying them money, and they're leaving it worse off than they found it because they're leaving a lot of chemicals and soapy residue, too much water, all that stuff. You don't need to deal with that. That stuff can make you sick. It's disgusting. You don't deal with it with Dirt Free. Call 281-DIRT-FREE. Go chemical-free with Dirt Free carpet cleaning. They use powerful engines to create high-pressure steam made from their patented super water. Your carpet's going to be fresh and deep cleaned without soap or unhealthy dirt-attracting chemicals. They've been doing this for over 30 years. They know what they're into. They clean upholstery, floors, oriental rugs, even your air ducts. They can clean everything you got going in your house. Give them a call right now, 281-DIRT-FREE. Tell them you heard it right here on ESPN 97.5. They'll do three rooms of carpet for just $99.95. They'll throw in a free speed dry to the first 25 callers. 281-DIRT-FREE. That's 281-347-8373 for dirt-free carpet.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. This is a renterswarehouse.com roadshow. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. From the MGM Grand in Las Vegas for the Terrence Crawford-Victor Postol fight is A.J. Hoffman, live from Dave & Buster's on Richmond. Here's Jerome Solomon and Danny Mata.
Now that's how you wrap up the show, John. Look at you. DJ Jong in house. 713-780-ESPN is your number. 713-780-3776. Final segment here of the Blitz. The Blitz finals for the poker tournament will be cranking up here at Dave & Buster's on Richmond at about 7 o'clock. Got the cards all out on the tables. The chips are all stacked up. Should be pretty cool and excited. I might just hop in and take a seat and act like I'm supposed to be in the tournament. See if I can win that sucker.
Are you a poker player?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Are you?
No.
I wish well, I was. Let's play.
All right. Yeah.
You're my favorite kind of player.
Man, you just take all my money. I don't. You know, I think I one time remember thinking, oh, that I can play. This will be great because what I'll do is I'll go in and no one will ever know when I'm bluffing because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. That was the worst strategy I've ever had in my life.
Yeah,
I was about I was about 20 years old. I got what was coming to me. I deserved it.
Yeah, you were dumb then, huh?
Yeah, that was pretty stupid. I don't mess with it anymore. So
I don't know what I'm doing. Nobody will know that I don't know what I'm doing because I don't look like I know what I'm doing. You are my favorite kind of poker player.
Yeah, like when everyone checks and then after everyone checks, I fold. Yeah, it was bad, man. It was bad.
Yeah, you were just you could just light a match on your money if you want to do it way.
That was the new
level.
It'll
make it a little faster and less painful.
Yeah.
Speaking of mentally challenged, Dwight Howard, in a story on ESPN.com, you know, Dwight's now back home in Atlanta, so he's sharing all of his life stories. Apparently, when he was with the Orlando Magic, one way that he would block out what was going on and the pressure at the free throw line was to sing Beyonce songs. He did that early in his career. And not coincidentally, early in his career, his free throw percentage was the highest. His rookie year, his free throw percentage was the highest it's ever been. He's never been over 60% except for that rookie year. He shot 67% from the free throw line.
If he shot 67,
he was a darn good shooter, free throw shooter back then.
At 67%, if he had done that his whole career, he would have been one of the most unstoppable forces this league
and
has
he's
ever
been
seen.
On a steady decline since until this year. He with the Rockets, he shot his worst free throw percentage of his career at 48.9%.
He's so, just start singing Beyonce again.
It is all mental. I've seen him at practice.
Oh yeah,
free throw after free throw after free throw. He just can't do it in games.
Has there ever been a bigger head case? I remember when he was with the Lakers. Even Kobe had mentioned that one time Dwight Howard went down, like knocked down like 90 something free throws out of 100 when he was with the Lakers in practice. And I mean, I don't think there's ever been a bigger head case. I mean, when you consider that the guy is automatic from the foul line until the game starts, and then he's atrocious.
Yeah, it's stuff like that and what goes on in people's heads. You think about it, and you can't help but think about it in terms of how you think you would react in certain situations, but it's hard to put yourself into someone else's body. But I know you see all the stories when Kevin Durant was hosting the teams to try to figure out what decision he was going to make in free agency. And everybody made fun of the Celtics for taking Tom Brady there to visit him. And turns out Kevin Durant's now practicing with the U.S. Olympic team preparation for the games in Rio next month. And he said he was awestruck that he opens the door and Tom Brady was the first one he saw. And just wowed that such greatness was in his presence. And who would have thought that a guy like Kevin Durant, who's been in the NBA for 9-10 years and is a superstar,
right,
a megastar, would still be awed by something like that?
Well, that's the thing about what greatness is. A guy like Tom Brady. It's Tom Brady. But like you think about it, did you see the story? Jay Crowder was stunned. He said he was absolutely stunned that Kevin Durant went to Golden State. He couldn't believe I think he said he felt insulted that Durant went to Golden State after the pitch that they laid out for him and everything like that. And I think he echoed a lot of people. Like, a lot of fans really feel insulted by the fact that after all that and the MVP speech and the fact that he was so well-liked, that of all places he would go to Golden State. Because this isn't like the Miami Heat thing in many ways. Because, like, for me, it's a testament to LeBron and Wade's greatness, but it doesn't do LeBron any good to drive it and kick out to Wade for a wide-open three and Wade's not a three-point shooter. Durant's the perfect fit for what Golden State does.
Yeah.
And he's going to win a lot of championships.
I don't know if they're going to win any championships, but I do know this.
He looks at his life
and decides, okay, for the next 6 years, where's the best place for me to be? He'd be a fool not to go to the place that he thinks is the best for him, as opposed to, you know, listening to you, the people who want to criticize him. You go, oh, no, you should have just stayed in the middle in Oklahoma City. That's where you should have stayed. Why would he do that when he wants to do what's best for him?
And so many people talk about legacy, but they always disregard, and I'm not saying he's going to, but let's say Kevin Durant goes out and wins 5-6 straight NBA titles. I'm not saying he's going to. Let's just say he does that. The legacy will take care of itself. It ain't going to matter that he bailed to Golden State at that point. You know
no,
what I mean? And the legacy part will take care of itself. The same way, like, when LeBron was in Miami, it was so obvious who the best player on the court was. When he won back-to-back MVPs and back-to-back finals MVPs, it was very obvious who the best player on the court was. You know, he only added to his legacy when he won this one with Cleveland. But he
was already established. And that criticism of he was going to Wade's team because he wanted to be Robin and he couldn't stand the pressure of being Batman, he showed pretty quickly that was not the case. And I'd be surprised if a similar dynamic doesn't develop with Kevin Durant, because he's that special of a player. He's not going to step to Golden State and go, oh, no, I'll just average like 18 points a game and step back because I'm not that good. No. He is that good.
You know, he is. And the thing is that it works so well because there's not a ball dominant player on that roster. Like, as it stands, you know, they can all go without the ball. A lot of Curry's shots come off screens. Thompson as well. He fits right into what they do.
And they shoot a lot of bad shots. So, yeah, he fits right in.
Exactly.
They just launch from all over the place. Late last night, I'm up in the middle of the night regularly. And, you know, like 4 o'clock this morning, the replay of the Game 7 with the Cavaliers and Warriors was on. And I was just – and, you know, I watched it, and I say it all the time, but even watching the replay, I'm still – just amazed at Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, the poor decision-making, bad shots that they take, but they make them so often at such a high percentage. They're bad shots for everybody else. They're not the wisest shots for them, but they're so good that they make you forget all of the standards.
I was watching Game 6 the other night, and it just blew me away how if you remember a Game 6, Klay Thompson was on fire the entire fourth quarter. It didn't matter until about 5 minutes to go because OKC had maintained that lead because they were executing. And then right there in the final 5 minutes, they stopped executing. Klay stayed hot. And if not for that, who knows what ends up happening. I certainly don't think Durant leaves if they go to the finals.
I think he does. I still think he looks at it and says, what's best for me for the next 6 years? Even if they had won the title this year, now he may have come back almost certainly then just to go, okay, let me see if we can do it back-to-back.
Well, you don't want to leave a championship team.
Yeah, right. But if he knows that Russell Westbrook is leaving after next year, and two, even if he's not leaving, I've done my time with Russell Westbrook. I'd rather play with some more team-oriented players than Westbrook.
I think he would have been more inclined to sign the extension had they just gotten to the finals. Just the 1 year,
and then
opt out.
After next year.
That he would have at least done that had they at least gotten to the finals.
Yeah, did you see the thing with the Rams cheerleader, the spray painted love notes on Klay Thompson's driveway?
Stalker alert.
What a good life. Hey, Danny Mata, thanks a lot, man, for stepping in. The poker tournament here at the Blitz at Dave and Buster's on Richmond's about to crank up. If you guys are in it, get out here and get your seat. It's going to be fun. You got big prize to win. And I don't know who's on tomorrow because Fred's still out of town. And AJ will be back?
No. It's the game day crew.
Oh, yeah. The game day crew will be subbing in tomorrow. Oh, that'll be fun. Those guys are big time. You don't listen to them on Sunday. Check them out tomorrow from 4 to 7 here on the Blitz. We hope you enjoyed it. Stay sportsy, people. Thanks.
ESPN 97.5.